Hello and welcome to episode number 45 of Investing from the Beach. I'm your host, I'm Chris Hansen, and I got my co-host with me today, Mr. Chris Lamb.
Hey, it's Chris Lamb here.
If it's your first time listening to the show, quick background on the two of us. We both hit time freedom. I did it when I was about 40. Chris got there when he was about 30. We didn't do it 10 years apart. Maybe we did do it 10 years apart. I just realized that. We're close to it.
You left in about 2002. I left in 2012.
Oh, so it did work out that way.
Yeah. Well, I guess you left end of the year. I left in the beginning of the year.
Got it. But we've been unemployed for both quite some time. Chris, 5, 6, 7 years. Me, 15-ish years, something like that. So 15, 16 years. We were both in sales at IBM. We met there as I had my eye on, I'm about 18 years older than Chris. I had my eye on the door. I'm getting tired of saying that too. That really starting to bug me. I don't know why. Just in the last couple of weeks, it used to never bug me. I think now because one of the episodes we're talking about old people, so maybe it's starting to hit me.
What, they retire?
Yeah, exactly. But about 18 older than Chris, and as he was joining IBM as an intern, I had my eye on the door. We overlapped by a couple of years. We both realized very quickly we had a shared passion for the stock market. And developed this great relationship around that. When I left, Chris stuck around a little bit longer. I think you could have left probably when you were about 28. You probably could have walked out.
Yeah, about that.
And so it's my fault that he stuck around longer. We had a number of discussions while he was at IBM. He'd either send me a text message or an email or a phone call that says, I got to get the hell out of here. How did you stick around here for 18 years? And my advice to him was stick around and learn what you can there so that if ever you decide to go and open up your own business, you've learned some things on somebody else's dime. So, you know, learn if you're going to make errors on doing it, do it when you're employed and the risk is much lower. So we stuck around for a few years. Hopefully you learned a little something out of that. I don't know that your life would be dramatically different if you'd been unemployed for another 2 years.
Well, let me take a quick minute and share, I guess, what I learned from that. And then you can finish the rest of the intro. Mm-hmm. But since you're on that topic, when I was, I guess for people who are learning the stock market today and they could see themselves achieving time freedom through the stock market, and then they get excited and it makes it kind of difficult to, you know, want to stay long at work, right? And so I think you have to change your mentality and realize that you're going to work, you're going to do something anyways, and just go and continue to do what you do and don't rush, you know, leaving work. And whenever you get to time freedom, you'll know it, you'll feel comfortable doing it. But if you know, have that kind of urge to get there quickly, it can take you a lot longer. And while you go through it, it's not fun because you're not enjoying the moment that you're at work because you're just trying to get out, right? And that's what I kind of experienced some of that, and then towards the end I was trying to shift that thinking a little bit, but it was pretty much done at the time that I realized that.
Now think about that. This may end up being our podcast topic. Who knows? If you look back on it, if you knew then what you know now, would you have, you know, if we're having this discussion when you're 27, now that mm-hmm. you know what you know, would you have stuck around till you were 30, or would you have even maybe have stuck around a little longer?
I probably wouldn't have stuck around that long. I mean, especially if I knew exactly what I was going to do, and I would leave. But it's hard to say because, you know, leaving allowed me to think differently. It's kind of like telling a student in college about, you know, that school is not important.
Correct.
Because, like we talked about that before, that all their lives, the students feel that, you know, that the school is the most important. They've always been in school, right? And then you get out and you're working now and you tell somebody that a job is not that important, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And so it's so hard to take them out of that mindset until they end up leaving.
And there is a sense of it, but it is important because you are still learning. So if you're in school, mm-hmm. it's important to learn. But once you get out of school, you realize as long as you've got that knowledge, now it becomes more important is, you know, what's your ambition? And how motivated are you? How disciplined are you?
Yeah, we're always going to learn, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a given that we'll always learn. And most of us go through school, I think we don't realize most of us just kind of chase the degree.
Yes.
Right? And we don't take the opportunity to really learn and as work as well. Just a lot of us try to just go for the pay or the high benefits and all that and not look at the opportunity to learn and grow.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just thinking about this too. When you're in school, you're focused on, like you said, the degree, getting the grades, getting through whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you look back on it, you think, oh, wow, I probably could have focused on this and have gotten more out of it. But you didn't see it at the time. And now when you're working, you're focused on, you know, pleasing the boss, getting the new job, getting the promo, whatever, you know, getting the sale mm-hmm. at the next, you know, for the next quota period, whatever it might be. But then once you leave work and you hit time freedom, you look back on the work days and say, you know, I could have done it a lot differently. But it's only because you've got the benefit of hindsight.
Correct.
So.
Yeah, not so much do things differently at work. I guess you can do, you know, there's some things I would, right? Just hindsight is, it's always better. But I think it was more of a mindset going through work.
Yes. Yeah. There's a different level of appreciation or respect or mindset.
Yeah. Like I probably wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have that urge or I wouldn't rush myself, even though I would leave around the same time. I wouldn't rush myself mm-hmm. and I wouldn't feel rushed. I wouldn't feel that urge. Like I got to leave.
Right. Yeah. It's reminiscent, just a side note, and I hope I can tie this back in to show that it's related. I get asked to speak at a high school in this past couple of weeks, and I was in there talking with them about the stock market. And the teacher that had me in had said, how about if we do this? I'll ask you a bunch of questions. You just stand in front of the room and you answer them. You can go in as much detail as you want. And all right, you know, you're inviting me. I'll do it. I can keep high school kids entertained for an hour. It's easy, but I'll do it your way. And one of the questions he had asked was, you know, he brought up a picture of like a photo off of Google that said, here's the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And it had a few guys standing around in suits with those colored vests, weird, funky colored vests that they wear, standing in front of one of the posts. And he said, what are these people?
They look like Valley guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. And he said, you know, who are these guys? You know, what's their role? What's their responsibility? And I answered him, but I remember thinking at the time, like, this doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But I thought, you know, Chris, be polite. You know, he's inviting you here. You know, do it his way. But I remember thinking later on, what I really should have said was, like, are you having me here to teach you how to open up a stock exchange? Or are you having me here to show you that you can make a living trading? Because if you want to open up a stock exchange, I'm the last guy you want to talk to. But if you want to know how to, you can make a living and walk away from a job trading, then, and this goes back to, you know, what you understand and appreciate, maybe it shouldn't be you that's asking me the questions because you don't know how to do it. And so you ought to let the person that has done what you're trying to do, don't be asking them questions. The one question you should ask them is, say, hey, what is it that I should do to get to be like you? And all these preconceived notions you have in your mind are probably crap and wrong, but you don't know any different. And the person that's up there guiding it or that has done it, and whether that's leave your job to trade, or if that's, you know, if you've never run before and you have a guy that can run marathons, you probably don't need to be asking him stuff. You want him to tell you what you should do or her to tell you what you should do. But the questions that he was asking, the best analogy I could think of, I think he's a swim coach, and said, you know, I'm thinking in my mind that the questions you're asking me are kind of the same if a swim coach would say, well, who makes the drain in the pool? It's got absolutely nothing to do with swimming.
Did you tell him that? That was in your head.
Yeah. I have a filter sometimes. A lot of times the filter doesn't go in there, but
okay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. But it's those kind of things. And so I guess the kind of the how to think aspect of that would be, whatever it is that you're trying to pursue, if you can find someone that has done it, maybe the best, don't hit them with a ton of questions. It's really one or two questions. Hey, what should I do to get to be like you? You know, and you know, if you, we've mentioned before the David Goggins interviews, and he said, you know, I get so sick of people coming up and saying, hey, what, you know, what style shoe do you wear? Do you pronate? Do you supinate on your, you know, how do you fix that? What do you eat? What do you, you know, how do you sleep? He said, all that is a bunch of crap. What you do is you run, and that's how you get there. You just freaking run. And so, you know, if you want to get to be like Goggins, you go run, and you kind of figure it out along the way.
It's a sad story to me, because, you know, the guy's totally missing an opportunity to learn something.
Who's that, Goggins? Oh, you mean the high school thing?
The high school, yeah. I mean, the teacher, right?
Doesn't realize it.
Yeah, and I don't think you gave a background. Is this guy was teaching like a financial literacy class, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to. Don't go look him up. I mean, his intent is good. I don't.
Well, you didn't say any high school.
No, but I don't know. There's a lot of classes that high schools that do a financial literacy class. But yeah, it was just.
That's okay.
I understand.
You didn't say anything. I said it.
All right, no problem. Yeah, but it does point back to. The questions were all about how to do. They weren't about how to think. And so it just, it's prevalent, or it's rampant, I'm not sure what the right word is, but that type of thinking or approach exists in almost everything that we look at. When you're looking at trying to be good in some field, some study, some, you know, a sport, a skill, whatever it may be, we all want to go in and ask a ton of questions. And the questions are usually pretty simple. You know, hey, if I want to be like you, what should I do? What should I start with? Based on where I am now, what should I do next?
Yep. Or if you want to ask some questions, maybe another one to ask is, what should I ask you?
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yep.
Because you don't know what to ask. You know? That's why you're learning.
That's exactly it. Because if you knew how to do that, you wouldn't be the one. You'd be the guy that was being interviewed. You wouldn't be the interviewer. Mm-hmm. I mean, so just a different way to think about that.
I think the guy is expecting that someone is showing up in the class, right? Now he's got his days covered, right, with the agenda, and keeping the students, you know, kind of entertained, and you know, like they accomplish something in the day, and. Your expectation was, hey, you're going to go in there and teach the kids something important, and maybe the teacher as well. But, you know.
We have different definitions of important.
Yeah, different, I guess. Yeah.
But you know, I get to give the guy kudos. He's doing a phenomenal job. That's not a bash on him. Mm-hmm. Right? All the stuff that he's putting out, you know, none of the stuff's ever taught at school. And so he's taken the first step in there. I think it's phenomenal. But I think in some of the you know, we all have that opportunity and things that we want to go learn to do. When you meet somebody who knows what they're doing, you hit it right on those. What's the best question to ask is, hey, what should I be asking you? Mm-hmm. And then sit down, shut up, and take notes. And you know, if they're usually they're not going to trend, no one's going to steer you in the wrong direction. They're more than happy and willing to help someone that wants to come up behind them and follow in the footsteps. But so I think we just set the record for the longest intro ever, the longest
that's
commercial.
Why you don't want to skip the intro? Or more reason to skip the intro.
Exactly. So bottom line is, the podcast is all about the how to think. Most people talk about the how to do when it comes to reaching, and they talk about financial freedom. But we don't mention that at all. That's a waste of time. You're going after time freedom. Financial freedom says you've got a source of income outside your job. Most commonly, you hear people refer to it in real estate, but they end up having to spend a ton more time supporting their real estate empire. And we look at it and say, hey, I want to figure out how I can spend as little time as possible in supporting my lifestyle. And whether you want to live a Beverly Hills lifestyle or if you want to live in a refrigerator box living under the freeway, I'm not going to judge. If you get freedom, you get my respect. And so we talk about the how to think aspect rather than which is about 95% of the equation, as opposed to the other remaining 5%, which is the how to do. you know, the cookbook, the rules, the mechanics, et cetera, et cetera. Did I miss anything on the intro? Oh, and neither one of us is employed. We may be given some financial advice in here. We are not advisors. We're absolutely clueless. We walk around in shorts and a t-shirt. Nobody will hire us. So you do not want to take anything resembling any kind of advice, excuse me, that we might be giving, because clearly we don't know what the hell we're doing, because we've been unemployed for a decade and a half and coming up on a decade between the two of us. So this is pure entertainment only, maybe a little bit of education, but absolutely no way are we giving any kind of financial advice. How was that?
It should be more education than entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the topic today, the idea is how to be the best. But it really boils down to, and if we look at it, we can speak to it from the stock market, but it's really about anything. The idea is, how do you be the best at whatever it is that you're going to do? What you'll find is, when you get to the point you're really good at what you do, it really becomes, for lack of a better word, like an art. In that, you end up recognizing a ton of the little details that the newbie or the neophyte or the newcomer to the field doesn't see, and they can't see it. And so you can see that in art. You know, I look at a picture on the wall or a painting and I just see, you know, whatever I see. But if you speak with somebody who has a lot of art experience or has been a painter, they can bring you up close and they'll point out and say, look at the brush strokes here. You know, they might have used dots here, or, you know, using a certain kind of brush or style. And that's as much as knowledge as I can show in art. So I'm clearly down on the zero level on that. But somebody that understands art and how it would be created can speak to all that. And they have a much deeper appreciation of the craft than someone who's brand new to it.
And you're not talking about art in terms of being creative.
No, I mean art like a painting.
Yeah.
Yeah, specifically, but it really, when you get to, for example, like in trading, once you know the basics of the mechanics, then it becomes an experience statement where you have to do it again and again and again. And it does become, there's an art to trading that you can't just read a book and get. You have to have spent time studying it. You got to go through the grind to get there.
Yeah, the art gets developed from work. It's not something that you're gifted with, yeah. You know, when you're born.
Nope, you earn it. And you earn it not by writing a check, but you earn it by writing the check for sweat equity.
Yeah.
It's the term in the last few years, the 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
But whatever it takes to get there, but it's the effort that goes into that. And you'll see that in sports figures. You know, we could speak to Kobe, you can speak to LeBron. Stories about Kobe where he watches film of his performance, as well as that of the whole team, as well as that as the opponent. And it doesn't matter if they win or lose, he's watching the film. It doesn't matter if he was successful or not on a particular play, he's watching the film. And he's looking for glitches either in his own motions, movements, you know, activity, whatever, and the same for the opponent.
Yeah, there was a recent interview that he did a few months ago, and he was discussing him watching film and how he got into it. I think he said he was always interested in watching film, right, from just old players, and so he was just really a fanatic of the game. And when he, you know, during his rookie years, first few years, you know, he was watching film, but when Phil Jackson took over the team, he and Tex Winter, you know, sat him down and showed him how to go through watching the game. And he thought, like, all right, you know, we're going to sit down and go through, you know, all these key plays and all these areas where they're executing and see how they would improve. And he's like, nope, they went from the beginning where, you know, they're just starting to shoot around and warming up and, you know, film of the introduction and film of the starting lineup and jump ball, and basically they didn't skip anything.
So they went caught it all from beginning to
end of the game.
Interesting.
Like during timeouts, everything. And they would rewind certain parts. So you're talking about a game would last, let's say, you know, roughly 2 hours, right? Mm-hmm. It would probably spend like 3 hours. And he said every single game, they didn't skip a game.
And they're watching their own team and they're watching the opponent.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the entire game. And he said he's paying attention to the level of detail, is, you know, what these guys would do during timeouts, you know, their demeanor on the court at certain quarters, certain times of the game, right? The way they would position their feet. You know, if they look tired, you know, whatever it is, their facial expression, whether they showed fear, showed they were concerned or stressed out. I mean, he was paying attention to these level of detail that no other players were doing, right? And then he goes on and said that, you know, by doing that, he already knows what everyone's going to do before they're doing it. And he said it's basically now it's just up to them executing it. He said, because if you execute really well, then, you know, you can't really stop them.
Mm-hmm.
But you basically know what everything that they're going to do.
You know,
there's no surprises.
You know what's going to happen before it happens.
Correct. And so the game really slows down, right? And so that becomes the art. It's, you know, he's the head of the game.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty fascinating just to hear. And I guess he's now transitioning, you know, that type of work, what he's been doing, into that ESPN series that he's doing called Detail.
Okay.
Yeah, so he would analyze and pick games, and they would do the episodes on that. He would just, you know, watch film and analyze the game of a certain player.
Yep.
Or a certain team. Yeah.
Interesting. So back to this this high school thing. The guy, the instructor, is a coach, and he's a water polo coach. I don't know if it's men's or women's, doesn't matter. But he was telling me a story ahead of time about the level of detail he likes to get into on the coaching side. And it's why, and apparently he's a very successful coach in water polo. At one point, I don't know if he was an assistant coach or something with the U.S. national team, and they were playing, I don't know, whoever the hell it was, in Brazil, Italy, whatever, it doesn't matter. And he said it got down to the final, I guess going to be the final seconds of the game. They had called a timeout, and the coach brought all the players over to the sidelines, whatever you call the edge of the pool, and they're talking through it, and he said there was this quiet. And the guy that I know said, hey, coach, can I know what they're going to do. He looked at me and he's like, what do you mean? And he said, I know exactly what they're going to do. I've been watching this. And he said, can I tell you? And he said, sure, go. He said, all right, guys, here's what's going to happen. You know, the like in basketball, you've got the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positions. I guess in water polo, you've got similar numbering, whatever that may be. I don't know it. I won't pretend to, I'll pseudo fake it, but I'm just saying the numbers. But he said, look, number 4 is going to come up on the left side, or the 4th position is going to come up here. You know, the guy bringing the ball forward will go here. They're going to hit him there. They'll hit the guy coming across on a pass. That's what they've done 4 times before today, and it's worked every time. Their top player will come across. You just have to be ready to move in front of them at the point they throw the pass, and we'll win. And he said it rolled out exactly like that. And after the game was over, the coach came up. He said, how did you know they were going to do that? And he said, I've seen it before. I was watching what they did, and they did it every single time. And so he said that was their go-to play. And so you just, from having studied this a lot, you can see it before it's happening. And that's probably a good example of what we mean by the art of this. There's a science in the movement, there's all that, but the art of it is having the inclination or the intuition through lots and lots and lots of hours of study to know that that's going to be coming. And it plays out exactly as you see it.
And it's pretty neat to put that work into the stock markets, because then that'll allow you to see the market.
It is doing awesome.
What it's doing.
It's awesome because you can see it coming, because the stuff repeats again and again and again.
And so it takes work.
It does. It takes a lot of work. But the...
It takes work. I don't want to say it's a lot.
A lot as far as time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not something you're going to pick up in 3 months. You start to get a feel for it, but it takes a fair amount of time to get there. When you begin to get really good at this, then it becomes the art. And it's difficult to describe to people who aren't familiar with this what you do. Because it's like you're speaking a different language. But you speak with somebody who understands it, and it's the coolest connection. I mean, you and I have that connection. It's the coolest connection. right? Because there's stuff that you see that you can explain. You're like, oh, I see exactly what you're talking about. And boom, boom. And more often than not, it ends up happening as you expect. But you weren't that way at 22 years old. You weren't that way at 25 years old, right? It was through, you know, lots of effort and continuous, just consistent grinding it out. You start to see this stuff. And so I'm firmly in the camp that says that's the mindset you have to have when it comes to managing your money. Because nobody else cares as much about your money as you do. On the one hand, people might say, oh, that's really hard. I think, compared to what? You know, you're sitting at home, you're in an air-conditioned room, you can sit here in your pajamas. Nobody's going to bother you. There's no manager breathing down your neck. And so if that's hard, you don't know what work is. You know, people that go out and labor, you know, other endeavors are a lot more labor intensive. Or you can take the easy way out, the lazy way, which is to give your money to somebody else to manage. And
you know, I mean, earlier I was telling you that it's not a lot of work because when you really compare it to other things,
oh, it's easy.
It's not.
No, it's easy.
I mean, just compare it to learning a sport, mm-hmm. or whatever, pick a hobby.
Yes.
You know, whatever job, I think most people think a job is easier because in their mind, just like I said earlier, you know, how if you have to change your mind at work and how the work becomes easier or harder for you, yes. while you're doing it.
Yep.
So work is easy for most people because they expect themselves to work till 65, 70.
Well, and they expect to put in 8-10 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. And they compare themselves to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, everyone else doing that. Or you know, 80-90% of people are doing that.
Yes.
And so it becomes a normal thing. So you don't feel like you're exerting yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. But when you're putting all this time in, not all this time, but let's say an hour or two, right, in the stock market a day to learn, you feel a lot. It's a lot of time because you look around you and nobody's doing it. Even the professional, they're not doing that, Chris.
Oh, no. Yeah, you and I have had that. Let's talk about that. Can I sidetrack you? We'll come back to this.
I don't think it's sidetrack. It's about work. Go ahead.
We had the discussion a few weeks ago. You know, if you turn on, we're doing this, we're recording this over a weekend. So the next time CNBC comes on for the listener, whether that's on a Monday or a Friday, it doesn't matter. Turn on CNBC and just even have it on in the background. If you're, you know, you do it during the day, and if you're on the West Coast, you can do it in the morning before you go to work. And at some point, some mutual fund manager or hedge fund manager or money manager, or portfolio manager, or whatever, will come on and they'll talk about, you know, they'll say, hey, Bob, or, you know, hey, Sue, what's your hot pick? You know, what do you like and what don't you like? And that person will spend a few minutes talking about it. And you made a great comment to me a while back that said, we know charts better than they do. And why do you say that?
Well, it started with, I think I'm looking at reflecting when I first started learning the stock market, watching TV and turning on CNBC or Bloomberg. And I see these people up there with their suits and, you know, combed hair and speaking the language of money and finance and stocks. And you figured, oh, these guys, you know, must be very experienced. They know their stuff. And, right, that's what was my perception. And then I don't know at what point I realized, man, I know a lot more than these guys. Right. And then I think along the lines of, you know, learning this, you see other people learning and going through the same path. And some of the students would tell me that, right, they're so impressed with so-and-so on TV, or they're starting to see themselves get more knowledgeable and recognizing, understanding what these guys are saying now. But yet they don't realize that they're on the path, or they already know more than these people mm-hmm. on TV. Mm-hmm. And so I just said, I realized, man, you do know more because it takes work. And I know the amount of work you put in to do these things. And the guys that are on TV, they spend way too much time, right? They got to drive to work. They got to get suited on. They got to comb their hair, put their makeup, right?
Exactly. And so they've got commute time. They've got prep. If they're on TV, right, they don't just mm-hmm. they don't walk down the hall, right? It takes a while to go in. They got to get prepped up for that. And then they're on for a little bit. Then they do a debrief. And then mm-hmm. later on that night, they're going to, you know, sit around with their friends and buddies and brag about it and go, hey, did you see me on TV? And they'll do that.
Dinners.
So, yep. So you get dinners. But then also, if they're running a fund, then
meet with clients.
They got to meet with clients, and they have to, they're always chasing down new money, and they have to appease the money that's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If they don't have a good month or a good quarter, somebody's going to threaten to leave. So they got to go placate that person.
Manage staff.
They got staff issues. So they may have a general manager that manages all the people stuff.
You got to manage the general manager.
Still got to manage that. And then if you're the guy that's running the portfolio, if you make all the go, no go decisions yourself, you're going to want some insight from others. So other people are going to have to do some work for you, but now you have to go through and comb through their results and listen to the argument as to whether you should. One guy says you should buy IBM. Another guy says you should sell. Someone else says you shouldn't be in tech at all. And someone else says we should be fully in, you know, whatever other industry it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sit and listen to all of that. And none of these are you in there studying the individual stock or whatever things go on. So you brought up a great point. You said, you know, you realize you and I put in more hours on the charts than these guys do.
Yeah, they're not in front of the charts looking at that many hours.
Nope. And so granted, when you first start off, you got a ways to go to catch up. But after you do this for a number of years, you actually know it better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
And when that reality hits you, you're like, cool. It's now just a matter of time, right? Because pretty soon then your results get better. And you'll do better than the market does. You'll do better than they do. The only difference is that they're pushing, you know, $20 billion. You might be pushing $2,000 or $200,000.
Yeah, in the stock market, who's the worst dressed guy?
The worst dressed guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Probably you and me.
No. Like of the well-known figures.
Buffett.
Yeah. See, well,
he looks the most rumpled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That goes to what I was telling you. I said, hey, look at the nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The guys that put in the work, they're not worried about their hair and makeup. They probably don't have as much time. He's, you know.
Yep. Yep. And, but look,
right? They always look like they never shower.
Yeah, it looks like they just got out of bed.
Breath stinks.
You're speaking about you and me.
Yeah.
That's what we're like until the market, you know, we're in LA, so market closes at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
We've got a mutual friend we joke with all the time saying, hey, you know, if we ever go to lunch at 1 o'clock, you know, if you want me to be on time, I'm going to have bedhead, my breath's going to stink, and I might be wearing whatever I slept in, and I'm going to show up to lunch.
You have morning and afternoon breath.
Yeah, but you know what? No, we all would understand. I wouldn't care. Could not care less. But if,
you know why I say, you know, where the breath really stinks?
Go.
Because their minds open more than their mouths.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
this is why I love you, man. There's wisdom in that. Because they're thinking rather than talking.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah, so the guys with the best looking suits and, you know, combed hair, neat, you know, shaved and all that, those guys aren't putting in the work for to learn the stock market.
Not like you can, and not like if you want to be good at this. And, mm-hmm. and it's not that you become you don't become maniacal about it. You just develop a passion for it, and you squeeze in the time to do it when you can squeeze in the time to do it. And if it's early in the morning, late at night, over lunch, you do what you do. But you start to develop a passion for it, and the results of that passion show up later on, and it shows up in freedom. You know, you may or may not choose to be driving a big car or live in the big house, but you got time freedom. And so with time freedom, you can decide, hey, I don't want to brush my teeth at 1 o'clock today.
It wouldn't take more time than smokers smoking.
That's true. That's a good point. So let's go back to Kobe. Talk about some of the stuff that we've seen that he does on the film. Or you have other stuff on this other?
No, I mean, I think it was the discussion was really about putting in the work, right? And so with Kobe, you know, there's other things that I think he was kind of demonstrating as far as, you know, why he's the best at what he does. It's the mindset and the hard work, right, that he puts in. And he had mentioned that, after he left basketball, he would still want to work out, but he didn't have any goals as far as working out. So, you know, before it was for basketball. And so now it's like he had to do, I think he had to set some type of goal, and he said, hey, he's going to shoot for being, get size and bulk, right? Mm-hmm. And then he said part of doing it, he would take his daughter, because his daughter's old enough now to drive and go to high school. And he said he would take her at 4 a.m. in the morning to go work out every day. And she would do the workout with him, and then she would go to class and go to school. And he said, you know, kind of father-daughter bonding time. And then she gets to see how hard he works, right? Because he said she's never seen that. He's always been traveling, and, you know, he's in the gym and, you know, at the basically at work, right? She's not with him.
It's the overnight success. He's doing the work when she's asleep.
Yes.
And it's done overnight, just not over one night.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And now that he's doing his thing in the, you know, in the studio, so she's not there to see him work either.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think he said this is part of that is to help her see hard work through working out, through getting up early in the morning and putting in that time. Right. And he says you got to do that with your kids, because, you know, they don't see you work. They just see you come home and play and hang out or whatever it is, or go on vacation, relax on the weekends. Right, but they have to see that hard work so they understand what it is, and that, you know, they'll put that in, and or they'll follow the example.
That's true. I'm just, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about my own kid. You know, it's we're recording this a little bit later at night. While we've in the time that we've been recording this, right, mm-hmm. he walked in at one point, you know, gave me a kiss, and I hit mute on the mic while you were talking, and he climbed into bed, and, you know, we'll be up however much later we are doing this. I'll be up in the morning before he's up. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't know how late I'm staying up to do this. And this is just a love thing, doing the podcast.
Yeah.
But then I'll be up in the morning, right, checking the market. And then he gets up, and we get him off to school. And then I come back, and I'm still watching the market during the day.
Yeah.
And then when I pick him up, he thinks, oh, Dad's just, you know, man, Dad's still in what he was wearing when I left.
Mm-hmm.
Right, not realizing Dad hasn't washed his hair, brushed his teeth. Because I smell like roses. And but he doesn't have a sense of the work effort that goes in.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't see, you know, Dad wearing a suit and tie.
Yeah.
You know, doing all that stuff before he was born.
Yeah. And so everything he sees you doing, it doesn't seem like work.
He's seen the end result of having done all the work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is, it's.
But
it's
even you staying up late night, you know, on the podcast, and He thinks you and I are just having fun talking on the phone anyways.
Yes, or sometimes we finish the podcast, we may talk charts for an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, he doesn't never sees that.
Yeah, but even charts, he just thinks it's fun.
Yes.
For you.
Yep.
It's because he's always seen you. That's what you do, and you know you're not talking like, oh, I gotta, you know.
I don't complain about it.
I gotta do charts, son. I can't see you.
I do. I don't complain about brushing my teeth. I just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so don't be surprised. He's like, hey man, I need more, tablet or iPad time.
Yes.
It's like, well, because you spend all that fun time in front of the PC.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So,
but maybe you can ask him next night and see what he says. I'd be interested to hear.
Oh, I'm almost tempted when I wake up in the morning. I may get up a little bit earlier and mm-hmm. say, hey dude, let's go work out.
Yeah.
And boy, I'll get major stink eye on that one.
Oh, just wake him up after we finish this podcast. Do it like Goggins style, just kind of like, you know, look him in the eyes, like put your face right next to his face when you wake him up.
For those of you that haven't read the book, there's a story in there where the book Living with the Seal, the author is a guy named Jesse Itzler, and he has Goggins come stay with him for a month and to train him. And he tells the story. It was I think it was one of the snowiest, that's the right word. Yeah, I guess the snowiest December in history in New York City. And Itzler lives in a penthouse apartment on, I don't know, Park Avenue or something, you know, very high-end living. And he said he woke up about 4 in the morning, and he said he kind of rolled over and spooned his wife. And he realized I think there's another person in this room.
Somebody's said, breathing on him.
Yeah, and he said all of a sudden he felt this presence right over his ear that kind of whispered in his ear, and he said, hey, bitch, let's get up and run. It's a good day to go for a run. And it's 3 degrees below zero. And that's kind of the attitude that he had on it. It's like, let's go. We get up, you know, you do. It's that old army adage, you know, the people in the army do more before everybody, get more done in a day by the time everybody else wakes up or something like that. And I mean, Kobe was doing that, right? He was putting in a lot more time before the others even showed up. This is when he was playing.
He explained why. I guess he put in that time because he realized that if he just worked out 2 extra hours a day or something more than the average NBA player.
Yeah, his peer group.
Oh, yeah. So he said, think how many hours he's got on top of you.
Yes.
Right, by the end of the year.
You do that
and so he figured out a routine that he could get in a few hours a day more in work out and training. So he figured in 2-3 years, you're not going to catch up at all.
Yeah, you'll never catch him.
Yeah, you'd never catch up.
And so that's cool. So if he can go back to his kids or his daughters, if he can teach them that work ethic, and then you put the long, a time or a long-term perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can train them on that in whatever they're doing, they're going to succeed. Whether they're going to be a basketball player, a stock trader, a restaurant chef, it doesn't matter. They'll succeed. You just have to be willing to grind at it.
You need that strong work ethic.
Yeah.
And it's not different in learning the stock market and learning how to manage your money.
Yeah, it's no different. And the challenge becomes for the masses, most people are unwilling to do that. They want the rewards quick. They don't want to grind. They want instant gratification. And in the stock market, consistent financial results do not come quick. You got to grind through it to learn the art of it. And at that point, then the rewards do come in quick and they pile up fast, but it's not going to solve a short-term financial need. And then when it does show up, you will not be disappointed.
And even if you're mediocre at it, it's still pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're not going to complain. You're not going to complain at all. So let's see. Next thing we talk about on how to be the best. As parents, we all tend to want to do things that are going to help our kids. We do it because we want to see them smile, make them be happy, maybe not have to go through the tribulations or the challenges that we went through. But if you do that in the long run, you're not helping them, right? You're actually hurting them. And so you want to be careful about giving them too much. You want to make them work for you. You want to make them struggle. And when you can see they're going to fail, you got to let them fail because that's how you're going to learn.
Yeah, going back to Kobe again, he referenced that in that interview as well about teaching kids. And people in general, he said he doesn't give them just money or material things, right? Because I think in his early career, when he was just becoming an NBA player out of high school, right, got a lot of money coming to him, and I think they even asked him like, "Hey, what did you do with your money?" And he said, "He just nothing. He just went straight to the bank, deposit an account."
Mm-hmm.
And then, I realized also, just looking back and I remember seeing a lot of players, they're very flashy and Kobe was not that guy. And he didn't have a big posse around him and, bought all these expensive, items and things.
No bling.
Yeah, no bling. And so I thought it was very interesting, very different. And then, you realize, I guess somebody asked him his thoughts about money, and that's what he said was he didn't believe in giving people money because there's all these people around him probably asking for it. And he probably felt compelled to give it, they probably gave him a hard time even. And he said he stuck with his principle that, he thinks that you're, that what you have as a human being is to develop and grow, right? And if you do that, you're taking that away from you. You're crippling people.
Yeah, you're taking away that opportunity for them to grow and learn how to do it when you just give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting when you run into people that have achieved whatever level of success that is, they get that. They understand it. And when you run into somebody that hasn't achieved, you know, a modicum of success, they look at that and then say, oh my God, that guy's, he's stingy. He's selfish. He doesn't want to share, right? Not willing to, you know, not willing to help out others.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is he's probably helping out others more by not giving it to them.
Yes.
Because it is the people are coming up and asking him for money. They don't have a money problem. They got a money management problem, but they don't realize it. And it's only,
yeah, and if you keep giving them money, they'll never learn.
So how do we relate that to trading? Well, early on, when you're learning to trade, you know, you're going to develop a set of rules, or, you know, find someone to teach you a set of rules. And with those rules early on, we want to break them. And usually you want to break the rules because you want to get to some financial result more quickly. And so you'll do whatever you can to get there faster, which usually means you're going to break a rule. What that says is you're most worried about the results and you're not worried about the process, right? Nor the rules. You're just focused on, you know, show me the money. I got to see the results. I want to see the results.
Well, so, another way to relate that is, I mean, what we're doing here is we are teaching people to manage their money. We're teaching them the fish, right? Instead of going, yeah, you know, let me just, you know, let me make a trade for you here. Right. And most people, hey, could you trade for me? Or, right. I mean, how many people that go learn the stock market and, you know, if you can just, you know, say that, you know, any fancy word around options and people will throw money at you.
Yes.
Right. And, but that's people's mentality. Hey, can you trade for me? Can you manage my money? I think you want to learn to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have that independence. And you put with a little work, like we said before, you will be better than the professionals.
Which is really hard for people to grasp. They think we're full of crap, we're selling something. And it's incredibly, sadly true. It doesn't take a lot.
You tell the story. Didn't you say you talked to somebody who tried to take a job in the financial industry?
Oh, just the guy I was talking about earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he verified that, man, nobody knows anything.
Yeah, so he was just recently, within the last 6 months or a year maybe, he went out and got a broker's license. I don't remember if he got a 6 and a 63, which means you can sell mutual funds. He might have also gotten a Series 7, which means he can sell stock. I can't remember if he did the 7 or not. But if you ever decided that you wanted to go work as a financial advisor or work in the financial services industry, the most common licenses that somebody will get, a Series 6, I can't remember what it does. A 63 allows you to sell mutual funds, I think. But remember, I'm unemployed. I can't remember. I'm probably wrong. But I know it's a 6 and a 63. It allows you basically to sell mutual funds. And a Series 7 allows you to sell stock. Basically, you give advice on stock. And so he spent, you know, probably a couple of weeks studying to get that exam or to pass the exam, and did that. And I don't know if I've ever said on the podcast, but the financial services industry is a weird beast in that, you know, all of us as individuals can run down to a broker's office tomorrow or even do it online and fill out some paperwork. And I think the only minimum is, I think you got to be 18. I don't think you can set it up for yourself if you're under 18. But if you basically can fog a mirror, and if you're over 18 and if you've got, you know, a few dollars to your pocket, you can open up an account, fund it with a few thousand dollars and or a few million dollars, whatever you're willing to put in there, whatever you got. And the downside to it is you can go broke overnight if you don't know what you're doing. You push the wrong button, do the wrong thing, your account balance can literally dissipate and go to zero from the time you go to bed to the time you wake up. It's nothing happen often, but it in theory could.
It's the most sophisticated form of gambling.
Yes. Yep.
Right. It's a really huge casino.
And there's no barrier to entry.
Yep.
None at all. And so in comparison, you know, if you want to go be a doctor, you have to get
the doctor, be the masseuse.
Well, you be the doctor, you got to go through all the time. And then you have to pass the boards for the state. You got to pass these state board exams. But on the other hand, if you want to be a masseuse, let's say you just want to be licensed to rub somebody's shoulders, it takes you a year of training to do that. So to just go give somebody a back rub legally will take you a year. But it takes you about 2 weeks to get a license in the financial services industry, and you could lose your client's money overnight.
Man, you're gonna go, the masseuse association or something gonna go after you.
See, it does not take a year.
It's like they're just rubbing people's back. That's all they do.
I understand, but I'm way oversimplifying. If you're a masseuse and I just offended you, forgive me.
They provide very good therapy that contributes to people's happiness.
And next thing you're going to say is namaste.
Namaste.
Now, really be offensive here. For those of you that don't know, if you've ever, let me see if I can say this without offending everybody that's in this community. A lot of times if you meet somebody that's kind of a spiritual type, you'll hear them say namaste. And I don't even know what it means. But whenever I hear somebody say that, my mind says to me, no money. So whenever somebody says namaste, usually it means no money.
No money.
And so the people that you'll hear say that, stereotypically, and I know there's always exceptions, usually, so if you ever hear someone, next time you hear someone say namaste, just kind of look at them and go, yeah, he's right. They don't have any money.
No money.
So
you're saying stay away from
them? Not stay away from them, just maybe not take financial guidance from them.
Yeah.
So where are we going with all this? We got sidetracked. So rubbing shoulders, licensing. Oh, so this guy went and worked for a financial services firm. And he called me earlier. I was sharing the story with Chris earlier today. He'd called me earlier and said he was going to leave because, one, it was taking a lot longer to build up the book of business that he needed to do to make a living at it. So it was a slow growth business from his view. But more importantly, what he realized was that the people that were training him had no idea about how to manage money in the stock market. All they were doing was, being friends with clients and looking to take over management of their portfolio, whether it's, 5, 10, 50, 500 grand, whatever the number is, and then put them into various mutual funds. And he laughed and he said, I've heard you describe this stuff, when you teach people the stock market. And he said, it was exactly the way you said it. And that they're not trained to do that. They're trained to be salespeople. And they do a great job. There's nothing wrong with what they do. But they're not trained to manage the money.
And this isn't specific to the firm that he's working for.
This is the
industry.
No, I'm not ripping on one of them. I'm ripping on all. I'm just speaking my experience.
No. I'm saying like his experience. Like what he has experienced as far as
not unique.
The knowledge, the level there. And how they, that's very typical of the industry.
Yes. And that's not a statement to, X broker or Y broker or X financial advising firm or Y financial advising firm.
The industry is like that.
It's the industry. Yes.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't mean everybody in there is that way, but most of the folks that are facing the public are the salespeople, right? And they're not the ones that are deciding what to buy and sell and when to buy and sell. And so you just have to be aware of that. And it goes back to, the lazy way to manage your money is to give it to somebody else. And they, in turn, that person is giving it to somebody else. They're passing it on to the fund manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up being one step removed or two steps removed. It's like, I don't want
to
do that.
And sometimes the fund manager gives it to another fund manager.
It could be. Yep. And they're doing a fund to funds. That's not uncommon. Oh, so back on this guy. So he ended up, he was calling me to say, hey, just want to let you know, here's what's going on in life. We haven't spoken a little bit. So I'm going back to my old industry. And what I'm looking for, or what I found, is a job that is right at or just beneath my level of expertise. So I can basically do it in my sleep. And then what I'll do is I'll spend my off hours learning to trade and furthering the craft. So the idea is that, I can do an 8 to 5. And now I've got time from 5 till 8, basically, to work on my time freedom. But yeah, I like the strategy. Do what you need to do to pay the bills while you're learning this other endeavor, and then one will eventually replace the other. And then you figure out, along the way, you figure out your purpose and what it is that you want to do with your time. And now when you have the ability to move over to that, now you go pursue that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's freedom. And that's an awesome spot to be. That's what I think everybody should work towards.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that story on the financial services industry or his experience, mm-hmm. I think those who are either considering it or pursuing it can learn from. It's because I think he expected kind of the big bucks early on. Mm-hmm. And that industry, I think, you know, it's actually pretty good. If the financial services industry and the insurance industry is one of those that I think you can truly get the passive income from, no?
Correct.
Right. Once you bring in all that money under management and you know, maintain that, it just kind of pays you without doing anything.
Correct. Correct.
Right. And so it does take a number of years to build up the number of clients. And so this person is experiencing, right, that. And you know, they don't want to go through it because they need the money right away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you are considering it and you're, you know, you're young and you want to get into it and you invest 10 years or so in doing it, it could give you that passive income once you leave.
Yeah. And for the listeners, if you're not sure what he means by that, for example, in selling insurance, and I'm going to use percentages, these are not real, just to give you an idea of how it could work. When you go sign up for car insurance, and whether you do it online or you go, you know, down to your local State Farm office, wherever you get insurance from, and you sign up with that person, the insurance company pays that insurance rep a commission for signing you up. So for numbers, just make it easy. Let's say you sign up on a $2,000 policy for your car insurance for the year. That the insurance rep might make, just for numbers, let's say it's 10%. I don't know if it's high or low, but just for numbers. And now when you continue it next year and you basically just do a renewal, the more often than not, you get a bill in the mail, and they usually set you up on auto pay, and they give you a note that says, "Hey, you know, in the next 45 days, we're gonna charge your credit card this $2,000 for your insurance for next year." And 99% of us just look at it and go, "Okay, cool." You know, think about it. Well, when we do that, that insurance agent now gets paid a passive income stream of a renewal. And they don't make, mm-hmm. let's say it was 10% before, they don't make 10%, but maybe they make 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever that percentage is. And so of that $2,000, if they make 2%, just to make the numbers easy, that would end up being, what, $40. And so as long as you remain a client with that, if those numbers are accurate, then each year that person gets paid $40. And for the most part, they don't usually have to do much. Because if you end up having a claim, you call the claims department. You might call the agent and they'll give you the phone number and then you call claims. And so if they can get tons and tons and tons of clients, then they get the renewal stream off that, which is wonderful, but it takes years to get tons and tons and tons of clients. And so that's what that refers back to what Chris was saying before about it takes, you know, a number of years to build up the client base, where then the mm-hmm. renewal revenue or the renewal income, the passive income is substantial.
Yeah, and that could be, you know, whatever insurance, car insurance, health insurance, life insurance.
Yes. Yeah,
the insurance. And on matter. The managing money side, it's money being put into funds and you're the broker.
Yes.
Right. Or you're the money manager or you're the advisor.
Yes. And so and some of you will say, well, no, I'm going to go with a no-cost mutual fund. Stop and think about it. Somebody had to sell that to you. And there is some overhead in managing that fund. They have to pay for offices. They got to pay for secretarial staff, whatever other stuff. And the money that is, where do you think that money comes from to pay for it?
The chunk of your dollars.
It's a chunk of the dollars that you put in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, they have all kinds of various fees that they call in there, but it's in there. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. You just have to be aware of it. And, you know, something that to be aware of in the money world, Anytime somebody touches your money, a little bit sticks with them. Money is very sticky. And so if your money passes from your hands to my hands to somebody else's hands, a little bit's going to stick with me as I move it on to the next guy. And a little bit's going to stick with them as they move on to the next woman. And so on and so on and so on. And there's nothing illegal. It happened. That's the way that it works. And so you just have to understand that. So let's see, how'd we get on that? Oh, you're asking about the guy that left the financial services, or is leaving mm-hmm. financial services to go back.
Yeah,
to
well, you were just explaining before. The passive income.
Mm-hmm. And so back on the trading side, you know, we want to get financial results quickly. Every one of us wants to have, you know, a big bump in our net worth or in our income or our bank balance, whatever you want to refer to it as. But we just want the results. Most people are not worried about the process. They're not focused on the processes and the rules. And it's the processes and the rules that will get you to freedom. Because if they work and if you can follow them, then it's just a matter of time. But what happens more often than not is that people want to break the rules or tweak them. And the rules are in place to keep you from losing money. And so people want to tweak the rules because they're not going at the pace that they want to. And then as a result of tweaking the rules, now you get creamed. And so you've always, always, always got to be aware of that. It is totally about the process. And you're trying to remove it. It doesn't mean you do automated trading, but you're focused on the process. And then you just have to develop the discipline to always follow the rules. And if you do that, if you can do that, you'll end up being a success at this. Because if your rules are wrong, you just tweak the rules, right? You find out where the break is in the rules and you adjust that. But as long as you're always following the rules, that's easy to identify. But it's when you stop following the rules, then we don't know if the issue is the rules or is the issue the user. And that becomes the challenge in trading. The next
process.
Exactly. It's all about the process. It's the rules. So the next thing to think about is, you know, we talked about Kobe earlier. We had another guy in there that people would say is the greatest of all time, being Michael Jordan. He trying to remember, you can tell the story on this. I think there was a video where it was in a game and he asked a rookie or
it was an interview. It was on also another interview, but I think it was B.J. Armstrong, one of his teammates.
Mm-hmm. Playing for the Chicago Bulls.
For the Chicago Bulls, yeah. B.J. was a point guard or a shooting, well, point guard, I think. And so he was on one of the interviews, and they asked him, you know, these guys always get questions about Jordan. And I think he mentioned that Jordan's mentality was very different. He was very different from the other guys. And what Jordan would would often do, you know, as a kind of a check on the rookies, you know, if there's some rookies are, you know, in the game playing with him in the huddle, he'll say, hey, what's the score? And the rookie will kind of often look at the scoreboard and say, oh, so-and-so. And he would say, the score is 0-0, right? And he wants to make sure that they always remember that, because that's how, you know, Michael Jordan approaches the game. He always sees each possession that, you know, they're on, the score is 0-0.
Yep.
Right? And so it's you don't keep score, right? You don't look at the numbers.
The last
basket. Because it'll slow you down.
The last basket doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's what are you doing on this play?
Yeah. And really, so he's focusing on that execution. He's focusing on the process. Mm-hmm. He's not focusing on the score. Because when you focus on the score, it's going to make you do the wrong things.
Yes. So in other endeavors, you'll hear people, it applies, I think you and I have gone golfing, or we were on an event where we had to golf, right? And I think I would say that you suck equally at golfing as I do.
We did?
Yeah, we were playing, I can name names. Guy lived out in Placentia, lived on a golf course.
Golf? With
yeah.
you?
Uh-huh. There, it was a team thing. There were about 8 of us out there.
Okay.
Anyway,
what do you call it?
But anyway, so the but we're out there. I know I stink. You know, I can swing a club, but it's not something I enjoy. To me, it's a big waste of time. I'd rather be looking at charts or doing something else. But the idea, and for those people that golf, what you did on the last hole is totally not relevant to what you're going to do on the hole you're on right now. So if you did incredibly, you know, beautiful shots, great. But that was then. Now we're on a fresh hole now. Starts all over again. If you stunk on the last one, doesn't matter. You're on the next hole. And you always have to treat it. What you did 3 minutes ago is not relevant. So you can see that in other games. And then if you relate that to trading, the mindset is you never, ever look at your last trade because what you did before doesn't matter. So if you lost money on a trade and you're kind of skittish to get in the next one, doesn't matter. If you made a boatload of money on the last trade and you're just antsy and anxious to get back in, get in the next trade, because of course, since you won the last one, you know you're going to win again. That's the mentality. Your last trade doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is your current trade. And the only thing you focus is on the only thing that you can focus on is the process, right? You never, ever focus on the money. When you focus on the money or the score in basketball, you screw it up. You always just focus on the execution. It's all about the process.
Yeah, in basketball, you pay attention to a team that there's a lot of runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why are there runs?
When you say runs, careful. You don't mean baseball runs. You mean streaks.
Yeah, you know, when the team goes on a run and they'll go like, you know, 20-0 or 20-2,
mm-hmm.
right? Or a team could be up 20 points and all of a sudden now it's even.
Yes.
Right? So why does that happen? Is because the team that was up 20 is letting off the gas. And so they're watching the score. The team that's down is also watching the score. We're down big, so let's step on the gas and play harder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or now they're focusing more on the execution.
Exactly. They're focused on the process because they know if they do the process right, the points will show up.
Mm-hmm.
The other team is focused on, we can't get behind, and they're focused on the score.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
so at some point they're gonna, you know, when they focus on the score, that's why you have these, you know, comebacks.
Yes.
But what's fascinating is when you watch the Bulls during when Michael Jordan was playing, and remember, I think they had the record, 72 wins or something.
Yes. Yep.
Right before Golden State. And so I remember they would always beat teams by like double digits, sometimes 20, 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
And they would never give back the lead. Every time they get a lead, they would keep on increasing it. So and that's the, you know, the only way to do that is to have the mindset that Michael said. Because if you play the right way, the lead should continue more and more. It should get bigger. If the other team is subpar.
Now, that same thing applies in trading.
Mm-hmm.
If you just focus on the execution, now the process is there, the money starts to show up. And if you just keep focusing on the execution, you pull further and further and further away from the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not focused on the money. It's the coolest thing, but it's hard for a newbie to get their mind around.
Yeah, and let's say you focus on the process, and then you're like, cool, you're doing great. And then now you focus on the money, and then it goes right back.
Yep, you screw it up.
Yeah, you screw it up. So it's like having the lead in the game, and then you screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
You're right back. Right? So that's what we meant in the mindset, and how you can apply it to trading. It's really, you know, that focus on that process and the execution that will help you continue to get better and continue to improve.
Yes. Yeah, because this is not get rich quick, right? Get rich quick. The only way the get rich quick works is maybe, I don't know, 50 people a year, if that many, that get lucky and win the lottery. But for the other, you know, 200 million or whatever the population is in the U.S., get rich quick doesn't work. But what's cool is once you know the process, the money comes in quick. And so once you have the process down, you can go from nothing to quite a bit in actually a fairly short period of time. But it's because you have the process down. And I guess a different way of saying that is think of somebody you know that is a successful business person, whomever that might be. And imagine you say, hey, this person, they got to start over from ground zero, no money. And if you being just the listener had to start at ground zero with no money, fast forward 2 years, who's going to be further ahead? Is it the person, is it you that has no experience and know-how, but also no money? Or is it going to be the one that has the know-how and the process down, starting with no money, they can figure out how to build it up? And the answer is that person will always come out ahead once they have the process down.
Yeah, and so I guess people that can't come up with the excuse and say, oh, you need money to make that money.
Baloney.
Right? Because you can give the guy that has all the experience and the right mindset, take all his money away. He'll go back and make it right back.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
Yeah, but the person who doesn't have the right mindset, you can give him whatever money, he'll be gone.
And easy examples, look at people that, rookies in a professional sports league, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, doesn't matter. These guys walk, you know, they're 18, 20, 22 years old. They're walking into suddenly a paycheck that's, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, 3 weeks before they had $5,000, if that. And now they've got a couple more zeros on there. And they have no idea how to manage it. But what do? For the most part, they focus on the dollars, and the spending is there. The money goes away, and they never have the opportunity to learn how to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
And without that process, you see them going broke, and you see it again and again. There's examples of this all over the place. Not just, and this is an example of the get rich quick idea. It's not a scheme. But it does happen. But it never lasts long because they don't know how to manage it.
You see, it's examples all over the place. You know what's a good place to see that?
What's that?
It's this, you heard of this new league called the Big Three? So Ice Cube had an idea of coming up
with the 3-on-3 basketball.
What's that?
The 3-on-3 basketball league.
Uh-huh, called Big Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
So watch
all those basketball players on the Big Three. They're the guys that don't manage their money.
Oh, interesting. So they're the used to be stars in the NBA, or you know?
Yeah, they can't get a job anymore. Right? No skills.
Interesting.
And basketball, you know, they can't get a gig in the NBA. Can't play for a international team anymore. Right. So the Big Three is their opportunity. So make some dollars while ever they can.
Do you see these guys? Is the typical player in their 30s or the typical player in their 20s that didn't catch on?
I think most of them are probably in their 30s.
So it's guys plus that played for a few years in the league,
mm-hmm.
X number of years, and then for whatever reason didn't catch on, injury, something.
Mm-hmm. And then, or they just weren't good enough.
Yeah. And so now they have no, and they don't have the, they don't have work skills to go work out in the real world or the non-basketball world.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, they go be assistant coach somewhere. It doesn't pay enough.
Well, I think whatever job that they got, they can get out there. I think, well, most jobs that they want to get, you know, it doesn't pay it's not going to pay them enough that they qualify for.
Yes, yep.
And so they decided, hey, let's just play Big Three, and Big Three doesn't pay much.
Interesting.
You know, you can give them a corporate job, probably pays more.
Okay. But they're not qualified. They won't, no one will
they won't, yeah, they're not qualified. And some of these guys are, you know, some decent name players that got good, decent contracts. To me, I don't think they're playing there because they're, you know, they just want to play.
Yes.
Right? Coming from the NBA, you're getting paid big contracts and then, you know, having to do this and travel and all that. The money's not that much. It's just, you know, they're out of a job. And they haven't managed their money well enough to, you know, make a living off of it.
We got to figure out how to get our message out to the, you know, it's such a small group of people. But, you know, it's interesting because even if you get the message out to that group of people.
Is that to the athletes? And
yeah, it's too late.
Yeah.
To their credit, you know, they do have to, and totally understand, they got to spend a ton of time working on their craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top guys make huge money. But there's always somebody right behind them willing to step in and take their position. And so they may not have a ton of time to manage their dollars. On the other hand, they do have a ton of time because those guys spend a lot of time. You see them there farting around with video games and whatever else.
Oh, yeah.
You could use that time productively.
Yeah, there's no excuse. I mean, you see the top guys like Kobe and Michael, they're putting in much more time in their craft.
Yeah.
But yet they still teach themselves about money. In business.
Correct.
Right? Because it comes down with the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a great example. You don't hear concerns about Jordan going broke.
Mm-hmm. Magic Johnson, those guys, right?
Nope, not at all. And if you look at the people would say, well, of course, it's because Jordan's got Air Jordan and the big brand and all that. Like, he could spend it just like anybody else has and done, but he doesn't.
Yeah, or he could ruin his brand.
Yes, exactly.
Right? How did he get the contract to begin with?
Yep. And so you look at that, you look at Magic is a great example. Mm-hmm. Kobe is, I'm sure, going to turn into that. It'll be interesting to see how LeBron turns out once he's done in the next X number of years with the Lakers or wherever he ends up.
Yeah, he'll be good with money too.
Yep.
Yeah, because he's focused on that. He's put himself around a lot of smart people with money.
He's had discussions saying, "Hey, I want to be a billionaire," and so he's gone and met with Buffett. Tell me, mm-hmm. What should I be asking you?
Yeah. See, at least he knows to put himself in that. And I mean, why is he coming to Lakers? Money.
Yes. Yep. You got the media capital right here, mm-hmm. entertainment capital. That's why he's here. So it's all in the how to think.
Yeah, it's always interesting when I see players turn down playing for the Lakers. Like, if you're interested in making money, you want to play for LA.
Yes.
Right? Yep. Because you think about all the players that leave the Lakers, they become nobody. I mean, just go back and you could just name them. Just look at all the previous players. And once they leave Los Angeles, they're like nobody. You don't hear of them anymore.
Correct.
At least here, even when they're not good, they have gigs.
Yes.
They're building their brand, right?
And we're not saying that just because we live in L.A. You hear about them in other industries. They go into media. They go into entertainment. They do something.
Yep. And who's watching them? They look at the line of Hollywood people.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they get all these connections and they can develop, did you see much of Chris Paul until he came to L.A.?
Nope.
Yeah.
And now that he left, how much do you see of him?
Not much, other than he still has his contract with State Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But he was on TV a lot when he was with LA.
All right. Any other words of brilliance you wish to impart upon our legion of followers? That's a pretty
No. I think where phrase. Did you ended on the just following the process and
yes, you got to be willing to grind. The results mm-hmm. will not show up instantly. But once you get the grind down, then the results will show up quickly. But you got to go through the grind. And so if you have thoughts or comments for us, and by the way, we have a different closing this time. We're trying something different. So if you've listened before, don't just fast forward to the end to hear the Hawaiian music. Got a different way of explaining this. But if you have thoughts or comments for us, please leave us a voicemail message at 747-24-BEACH. The explanation on that, any beach in the world can be reached in 24 hours if you jump on a 747 airplane. So the number works out to 747-242-3224, I believe. But it's 747-24-BEACH. If you want to send us an email, investingfromthebeach@gmail.com. You can also go to the website, investingfromthebeach.com. You can see how good looking and smart Chris and I look. There's a book list on there. There's some other stuff you may find interesting to read through. And let's see what else. We know. Well, so normally we do with the closing, we talk about Tuesday waves. And the idea is that, when you hit time freedom, you go out and enjoy your life. And you don't have to deal with the crowds at the beach on a Sunday or a Saturday. Because the waves sound so much better during the week. And Chris, what was your explanation? The blue collar, white collar, no collar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess I was thinking about when you have or certain personalities, guys would say, hey, I'm more of a blue collar worker. I'm more of a white collar guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have friends who are like that. You can tell which guys are how they are. And then I realized that, man, you don't want to be any collar. Because that is really, that's true time freedom.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't wear collared shirts, or I haven't worn collared shirts for a while.
Yep.
And it feels weird when I put one on, Chris.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, I feel really uncomfortable. Like I don't know what it is.
Yep. It feels weird, this thing hitting the hair on the back of your neck. You're not used to it.
Yeah, or it's just the look. It's just like, whoa, why?
Yes.
It looks too formal.
How come I can't see all my neck?
Yeah.
Yeah, something's not right. For years, people have joked with me saying, you know, I meet people for dinner once in a while and I'll show up in pants. Mm-hmm. And then people say, oh my God, I didn't know you owned a pair of pants. It's weird not to see your knees.
Yeah.
When we're sitting talking.
And it'll look weird. Because you haven't seen yourself in that for so long. It looks weird.
Yep. So.
Yes. And you know, the no caller thing is also to me, you think about it. A very high percentage of people wear collar shirts when they are working, blue or white.
And who do they work for?
The business that you own.
Well, the businesses that are owned by the guy who doesn't wear a collar.
Correct.
So if you want to do blue collar or white collar work, that's great. Just remember, you're working for the guy with no collar. That's what you're trying to get to. That sounds a lot better than saying.
That sounds a lot better. There you go.
Well, no, but it sounds a lot better. What I was going to close with was to say, man, I don't recognize you with your pants on. And on that one, we'll let you go. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.